Welcome to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Decker. This podcast is dedicated to providing my books in full, unabridged audio format. Look for new episodes every Tuesday. Now, on with the show. Hello, and welcome back to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. This week, we are continuing to read Blood Games. Last week, we read. With the pedal to the floor, I didn't slow a bit as I rammed through the gate. The mirror on the right side was ripped off. Metal shrapnel and debris flew in from the missing driver's side window, and I used my arm to cover my face. I slowed long enough to see the way was clear before turning onto the road and slamming my foot on the gas. And now, episode 21. My heart beat in my ears, and my head hurt as the final image of the man I'd shot hung in front of my eyes, threatening to distract me from the road. My hands would have been shaking if it hadn't been for the way I clung to the steering wheel. His hand had moved for his pistol while he begged. He'd been about to kill me, hadn't he? I replayed the event in my mind, wondering if there'd been another way out of the situation. His face had changed right before I'd fired, when he'd brought up his gun and thought that he'd had the upper hand. He had thought he had played on my emotions. But I could not get the image of what the bullet had done to him from my mind. It was a struggle to keep my focus on the road. Each breath was a battle. He had meant to kill me. I'd known it and had shot first. It had been my only option. When I reached an intersection, I took the corner faster than I should have. The wheels on one side left the ground, and I was afraid the vehicle was about to roll. In my hurry to leave, I had not put on my seatbelt, so I gripped the steering wheel even harder and jammed my feet up under the pedals, hoping I would survive. When the tires slammed back onto the road, I exhaled. I pushed my foot onto the gas pedal, making the tires squeal. The potential accident, had distracted me from my thoughts, but now that it was over, they came swirling back like a hurricane, threatening to uproot my sense of self and reality. It had been him or me. I knew it. He had known it. If he'd put his hands in the air and surrendered, he would still be alive. But knowing that did not make it any better. Was I developing a taste for killing? I had never experienced it, but I'd heard some people enjoyed the blood. I couldn't say if Beltran or Payne had been that way, but I suspected that if one of them had enjoyed killing, it would have been Payne. Beltran had not been afraid to do whatever was necessary to accomplish his purposes, but I couldn't say he enjoyed taking lives. Am I any different? I wondered. The question caught me off guard. It was a natural thing to wonder, considering my decision to fight fire with fire. To go after Reed where it hurt him the most and by denying him the ability to use my morality against me. No, bloodlust held no appeal for me. It was not even remotely interesting to me. But yet I had to wonder if I had become desensitized to the killing. Doesn't the very fact I'm bothered by this man's death prove I'm not? But right before I'd killed four men and had left them on the steps without a second thought, perhaps it was the man's proximity to me at the time of his death that bothered me. I shook my head. I knew one thing for certain. Now was not the time for introspection. I had barely escaped with my life. I didn't need to justify what I had done. It would have been better to leave Reed's men alive, but I hadn't put them in my way. I hadn't forced them to throw their lot in with a man who had little regard for human life. A man who spent life like money, without a second thought. I shuddered as I remembered how Reed had ordered his men to shoot through Sam to get to me. Their decisions had put them in the ground. I wouldn't have killed any of them if they had left me alone. But wasn't I the aggressor? While I processed the question, I fought off the guilt that threatened to overwhelm me. I had good reason for my aggression. Reed had killed Margaret and Benji's parents so he could make the children his slaves. Nobody else knew what he'd done. He was savvy and well-connected enough that nobody else would ever know unless I exposed him as the monster he was. As I turned another corner, this time slowing beforehand, I looked over my shoulder, checking for any signs of pursuit, but found the urban street empty. It was surreal. The rear windows of the vehicle had been destroyed. My look had not been long, but it appeared there wasn't a single shard of glass remaining. With all those bullets coming my direction, I was lucky to have escaped with just a scratch on my arm. Perhaps I might have said a silent prayer of gratitude if I believed in such things, but I did not. Even if I did, God, or whoever was up there, wasn't going to hear me if things were the way Sister Bautista claimed. I had done too much to block that channel. I believed in myself and what I could do. That was all the religion I needed. I was going to save those kids. Reed would be out of his safe room by now, thinking his men had things well in hand. I slammed my hand down on the steering wheel, wishing I could be there, stepping out of the shadows to finish what I had begun. His taunting words flowed back into my mind. I hated how he had reframed the situation. His outright lies and cover-up of the truth by a tweak here and a tweak there, all spoken with a voice that projected confidence. I saw red as I took another turn, checking again for any signs of pursuit and not seeing anything. Now was the ideal time to strike, but I was in a vehicle on its last legs. How long before the engine ceased? I looked in the side view mirror, trying to determine if I was leaking fuel. The road was dark and I could not tell. The tire indicator was off. If it had not been destroyed in the battle, it meant the tires had come through all the shooting unharmed. That was an oversight of Reed's men. That should have been one of the first things they aimed for. Perhaps my pivot from running to attacking had taken them off guard, or maybe they just lacked training. Whatever it was had allowed me to get away. I was grateful that even through all my stupidity, I had somehow been able to survive. Chris would be furious when she found out about this, so I would keep this under wraps if I could. I shuddered. At first, I thought I was just reacting to my morbid thoughts, but then I realized my hands were getting numb. The wind from the broken windows made the temperature inside the vehicle freezing. It didn't help that I'd been holding the wheel in a death grip since I'd almost toppled the car. Releasing one hand, I opened and shut it to get the blood flowing. Afterward, I turned on the heat and pointed the vents at my hands. As the engine was already hot, I immediately felt the rush of warm air. When I passed a speed limit sign, I realized I was going more than 30 above. I let my foot up off the gas. Although my instincts screamed against doing so, I slowed to a paltry 25 miles an hour. I felt like I could have gotten out and run faster, but I forced myself to keep the speed constant. I needed to make a plan. A plan that did not involve Chris, if I could avoid it. She was not cut out for this, and considering how I'd forced her to leave, I had a feeling that she was going to make sure she was by my side for anything else that happened if we met up again. That would not be a good thing. Even though I had had a romantic attachment to Shannon, it had not been a problem because we both knew the other was competent and more than capable of taking care of themselves. When the bullets had started to fly, looking back on it, that should have been the clue. Blackbrick had not been a government organization. We had focused on the mission. With Chris, it wouldn't be that way because she couldn't hold a candle to Shannon's capabilities. My hands were gripping the steering wheel, so I forced them to relax position. They were starting to sting, which was a good sign. Feeling was returning. What should I do next? The first answer to that question was to attack Reed, but I knew that wasn't going to get me anywhere. I had to push that desire away because that was not an option. I needed to do something with the Suburban, even if it continued to hold up. I couldn't afford to spend much more time in it. It looked like I'd just driven through a war zone with a target painted on the top. All the side windows had been shot out. The windshield was so damaged, I was lucky I'd been able to find a spot about 4 inches in diameter that I could see through. I had to slump in my seat to use it. In the movies, the hero would just push out the windshield with his hand. I reached up and found it was still in place. Maybe I could get rid of it if I were in a position to kick, but it wasn't going anywhere short of real effort on my part. My dark chuckle escaped from my lips, making me think of the men I had killed. I took a deep breath and pushed my thoughts of them away for good. My purpose was clear, and continuing forward was my only option. Maybe one day, if I could get away from this life, I could afford to wonder about the morality and motivations behind my decisions. But that was not today. The further I went without any of Reed's men catching up to me, the more I began to think that I'd made it away. When I took the next corner, I caught a glimmer of light from the coming dawn. Perhaps I should ditch the car and head back to Reed's home on foot, taking advantage of the shadows while they lasted. If I was patient, I might have an opportunity to take a shot at Reed from a distance. Something told me he was unlikely to stay after everything that had happened. Besides, I only had pistols. To do something like that, I would need a rifle. Even if I killed him, that would not solve the problem of the kids. If I could not convince them of the truth, they would not come with me. Somebody else would step up to run Reed's enterprise. What would they do with the kids? Perhaps they would see them as a liability and get rid of them. I ground my teeth, wishing I had time to work my way into the safe room. They had been so close. Letting out a sigh, I did my best to let my frustration go with it. It was not helping. When I came around a bend, I realized that I'd been wrong in my earlier assessment about the sun. The surrounding buildings had kept me from appreciating its position. It was already past the skyline. When I'd left Reed's compound, it had still been dark. The amount of light had increased in the 10 minutes or so since, as had my need to ditch the conspicuous vehicle. While I'd been struggling with my tortured thoughts, I had not paid attention to where I was going and had headed towards the city. So far, I had managed to escape any unwanted attention in my derelict vehicle, but that was not going to last. I pulled into a rundown office complex and parked behind it, leaving the keys in the ignition. Before I got out, I wiped down the steering wheel and the door handle. I also went around to the back and checked the rear, half expecting to find a cache of weapons and ammo. Surprisingly, the vehicle was clean, or the weapons were well hidden. I had been hoping for a rifle because I might have headed back to Reed's home if I had found one. It was strange there was nothing. For as often as I had seen this vehicle, I would have expected it to be well equipped. Reed should have had an armory in the back. I looked around and saw a young boy on the sidewalk. When he started to look at me, I turned my back to him. If there were weapons hidden in here, I couldn't afford the time to find them. So ended my chances of getting to Reed today. I geared up to punch the door but stopped myself. As I exhaled, I realized it was time to take a step back and consider my options, even though I was likely to have a coronary. I left the driver's side open to advertise the vehicle would be an easy mark. As I walked away, I tried to avoid thinking about the man who'd lost his life when he'd been distracted by the door of the Suburban and I'd shot him in the chest. I could not. All right, that is the end of the Blood Games for this week. As we did last week, I'm going to continue reading from Monkey House. 5. The deepening shadows made it difficult to tell what the creatures were, but I had a sinking feeling in my chest. This was what had scared Fuzzball. And judging by the way they looked, it was small wonder why he was afraid. They moved on two legs with arms that were long enough to drag on the ground, though I couldn't be sure because of the way the corn hid them. Their bodies were lanky and they had the heads of a warped-looking ape, something between a gorilla, a monkey, and a human. I didn't want to believe any of this was real, but as I could see them heading towards my home, I had no choice. I ran down the stairs to the front door. I couldn't remember if I'd thrown the deadbolt, but now that was all I could think about. Becker raised his head as I passed, and Fuzzball had found a chair that he'd pushed over to a window so that he could look out of it. I didn't stop until I arrived at the entrance. I noticed the deadbolt was in place in between gasps for breath. Becker let out a long howl that was followed by another round of barking. I racked my brain, trying to think of where my Mini 14 would be. Was it in the basement? Perhaps I'd left it in the woodworking shop. I went into the garage, a small amount of tension released from my shoulders when I saw my axe hanging on the back wall. At least I had not misplaced that. As I pulled it down and hefted it, I remembered how my father had always had a pistol in his belt while working on the farm. He had no way of knowing how I, almost 50 years later, deeply regretted not following his example. I did my best to assume my trial frame of mind as I ran back into the house and went up the stairs with my axe in hand. It was cold. It was a cold, detached way of viewing the world that I used when doing battle in the courtroom. It worked, and for a moment I was able to grab hold of it. It felt like a glove and felt like an old friend. It had been too long since I'd last assumed it, and it lasted right up until one of the windows in my front room broke. Okay, as a reminder, Dead Man's Fear, the sequel to Dead Man's Game, is now out. You can find it on Amazon.
That's it for this week. I hope you have enjoyed the show. Tune in next week for another installment of the Dan Decker Books Podcast. One last thing before you go. Sign up for my newsletter at dandeckerbooks.com, and you will receive a free ebook copy of War of the Fathers. The text, audio, and music for this show are all copyrighted by Dan Decker. All rights reserved. This podcast is published by Xander Revolutions LLC.